Oh, my friends, you are an ocean. And I am speechless looking at you. If this whole hall were empty, no sound echoing around it, no lights shining in our eyes, I would still be speechless. I face the people of Baha, and they have made me speechless. I am here to speak about the maid of Baha, and that also makes me speechless. When I was preparing for this talk, I thought, what can I say? In a place so big, filled with so many of the people of Baha, what can I say about one single woman called the Maid of Baha, the Scion of Baha, the Remnant of Baha, an archetype of the people of Baha? I looked in the writings to share words with you, and there I found that Abdu'l-Bahá, before me, said that he too could not speak of her befittingly. I dare make no mention, he wrote, of the feelings which separation from her has aroused in my heart. I do not know, he continues, in what words I could describe my longing for my honored sister. Shoghi Effendi, writing of his great aunt, also said that he too could find no words, not even a droplet of all thine endless love can I aspire to fathom, nor can I praise and tell of even the most trifling out of all the events of thy precious life. She was named Baha'iye by Baha'u'llah. She was given the title of the greatest holy leaf, the most exalted leaf. But in her letters, she referred to herself as this yearning prisoner, this lowly and grief-stricken maidservant, this wronged one. I looked for expressions in the writings of Shoghi Effendi that would try and capture something of her nature, and I found the most wonderful imagery to share with you. She has been called a leaf sprung from this pre-existent root, a fruit of his tree, a lamp of his love, a symbol of his serenity. Shoghi Effendi called her a love-lorn moth, a soaring pillar, a rich mine of faithfulness, an orb in the heaven of eternal glory. How can we hope to encompass anything of her nature when words do not suffice, when all our lives put together in this great hall cannot comprehend the least trifling of the events in her life? She has a rank in this dispensation that is higher than any other woman can hold. Her station is one among those that revolve around the greater manifestations of the past. Those women, like moths, that revolved around the great suns of the manifestations of the past. Baha'u'llah wrote of her station with these words: "Verily, we have elevated thee to the rank of one of the most distinguished among thy sex, and granted thee in my court a station such as none other woman hath surpassed." During the ministry of Abdu'l-Bahá, her station was similarly exalted. Shoghi Effendi describes her as a staunch and trusted supporter of the peerless branch of Baha'u'llah, a companion to him beyond compare, his competent deputy, his representative and vicegerent, with none to equal her. Shoghi Effendi himself describes how much she meant to him during the first years of his ministry until her passing in 1932. He says, "She was my soul and earthly sustainer, my most affectionate comforter, the joy and inspiration of my life." Between her and Baha'u'llah, Abdu'l-Bahá, and Shoghi Effendi, there was a subtle bond, a kinship that was infinitely tender and powerful. To Baha'u'llah, she was far more than a daughter, for it seemed she was like a mirror in which his good pleasure was perfectly reflected. He says to her, "How sweet to see thy presence before me. How sweet to gaze upon thy face." To Abdu'l-Bahá, she was surely far more than a mere sister. For in letters of consuming tenderness, he writes to her as, "Oh, my sister in the spirit and the companion of my heart, the beloved of my soul." After her passing, the secretary of Shoghi Effendi wrote about the subtle bond between the guardian and the greatest holy leaf, saying, "For the subtle and spiritual attachment that the guardian felt for her was a bond so strong as to defy description, nor can the mind encompass such an exalted state." Perhaps It is not presumptuous, therefore, if we should say that this subtle and mystic bond is still present with us today, working through the covenant of God, through the divinely ordained administrative order of God, and that her loving care and protection is with us now. That there is no coincidence, friends, that the Universal House of Justice should call us here today, 50 years after her passing, to coincide with the year that the House of Justice is itself stepping into the plenitude of its powers, entering into the seat of the Universal House of Justice on the slopes of Mount Carmel, a building set like a jewel on that arc at whose hub and center there lies enshrined the monument of the greatest holy leaf. Surely that subtle bond is with us today. It was a legacy given to us 50 years ago when she passed away. Today we are here to receive that legacy again, and none of us need leave here portionless or orphaned. I will speak today about the greatest holy leaf, not as a historian would, for I have no sense of biographical detail. I have no head for dates. I will fail you if I attempt to speak clearly and coherently about every detail of her life. What I will attempt to do instead is to speak about her suffering in her life, about her service that gradually widened its sphere of influence as a result of that suffering, and finally, about the nature of the symbol that she is for us, not only as individuals, but as institutions. How can we model ourselves on her services? The greatness of her station can only be measured by her obedience and her love for the covenant of God. Her obedience and love for the covenant is what ensures her proximity to the center of the covenant throughout her life. And that proximity surely cannot be measured except by some reflection on the degree that she suffered. The greatest holy leaf was an initiate of suffering, schooled in sacrifice, and she learned everything there was to know about loss. From the earliest years of her life, she was deprived not only of home, security, but also of her dearest father, thrown into the prison of the Siachal when she was a mere child, and removed from her again into the mountain fastnesses of Suleymaniye in the exile of Baghdad. Separation from her beloved father, exile from her home. Such was the beginning of the life of the greatest holy leaf. And in his letters to her later in her life, we read how Abdu'l-Bahá was one of the educating voices that trained her in this school of sacrifice and instilled in her the capacity to endure, which is what makes of her such a symbol for us today. For he said, "If thou dost not bear these hardships, who would ever bear them?" He counsels her when she endures separation in these words: "However great the distance that separates us, we still feel as though we were seated under the same roof, in one and the same gathering. For are we not all under the shadow of the tabernacle of God and beneath the canopy of His infinite grace and mercy?" During these early years of separation and sacrifice, during which she lost one younger brother and also later in Acre her older brother Mirza Mehdi, she was in her role acting as an auxiliary, assisting her mother. Most of her services were internal, dealing within the household. She served tea. We can imagine how much she must have assisted the mother who was so dear to her. With what joy she must have anticipated the return of Baha'u'llah from Suleymaniye. She was herself never married, but that training she received as an assistant to her own mother made of her a symbol of such motherhood as we cannot conceive. For she was entirely unpossessive in her mothering. And when she died, Shoghi Effendi wrote that we were orphaned, left destitute. For the whole Baha'i world seemed under the protection of her mothering. If we think of this quality in relation to ourselves, we see how often we may be called upon to be mothers to each other, no matter who we are. When we think of this quality in relation to the institutions, we realize that we surely have in our assemblies a parent whom we can turn to with absolute trust, if those institutions could also evince the characteristics of such gentle mothering. In relation to those institutions, could we not also mother them? For this is an infant faith of God. And when we remember the greatest holy leaf, we can also try and extend that mothering, that generosity, that nurturance, that nourishment to the infant institutions that are growing up all over the world.